So I figured since it's July 4th, it should be appropriate to discuss the freedoms and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, you know, these types of ideas, not really in any kind of depth, but just these types of ideas from a little bit, one possible angle that you could take of many, but one possible angle that you could take from a Torah perspective on the ideas of the freedoms that are provided to us from the United States of America. So for starters, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which Perek Gimel Mishnah Beis, which tells us, Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim Omer, Hevi Mispalel B'Shlomo Shel Malchus. You should always daven for peace among the government. You should have, should try to make sure that the things are going well for the local government, the Malchus of the place in which you live. She'il Malei Mora'ah, Ish Esre'eyu Chayim Bolu. Right? If people were not afraid of the Malchus, if there was not enough respect for the institution of government, then people would just eat each other alive. That you need this idea you need this fear of Malchus, this fear of government and the law and order that is brought about by organized government to keep people in line. Otherwise, people will simply act inappropriately, and they won't, people won't be able to survive. And therefore, it's a good thing to always daven that things should go well with the government. That's where we get this idea of davening, tefillah l'shlom. Nowadays they say tefillah l'shlom ha-medina, so referring generally to Medinas Yisrael, but when there always was a prayer for the local government, whatever that government was. Remember, Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim was the assistant Kohen Gadol during the end period of the Bayis Sheni. So we weren't talking about a really great government that was very just and was very enjoyable to live under. We're talking about the Roman procurators who were ruling over the land of Israel at the time and were not always so friendly to the Jewish people. And yet, Rabbi Chanina Skana Kohanim said, still, it's always a good thing to have a government that, he was very against the concept of anarchy, that he said there should always be a government that takes, that they have the final say in the way the country is run, because otherwise people left to their own devices don't do too well, and they tend to make life difficult for each other. So that was said about seemingly all types of governments. Obviously, there are certain governments that we don't recognize as real governments, that sometimes the Gemara will talk about a particular ruler who mints his own coins and the government and tries to basically establish himself as a governor, and the Gemara will say something to the effect of, you can't do what we call pidyon meiser sheni on this person's coins, because what back in the day, like when they look into the history and the archaeology of everybody in ancient Rome, so every single Roman Caesar who came to power would mint his own coins right away, sort of establish himself as the ruler. And I don't remember, I took this my first semester in college, I took a course in Roman civilization, and I remember the professor, he said that the average lifespan once you became Caesar was less than a year. It was a very, very short, short position. You didn't get to hold the office for 8 years and then retire and, do the speaking circuit. You had to leave the hard way. So generally, I think poison was the assassination method of choice back then. So right when you got into office, you knew you had very little time to make your mark. So one of the things that you would do was mint your own coins. And they would mint their coins sort of to show that they were the Caesar, and then the whole empire would get a hold of their coins. So that those coins, if they would have been in Eretz Yisrael, when people needed to be poed the Meiser Sheni onto coins, so they have to be considered legitimate coins of a real government in order to be allowed to do so. And therefore, once in a while, when there would be like this local pirate who would sort of take over a town or two, and then Chazal would say that this fellow, he may have minted his own coins, but he doesn't represent a real government, and therefore you can't be poed to Hektish and Meiser Sheni onto his coins. There's no such, we don't recognize his coins as legitimate for these purposes. Okay, so anyway, that's the basic idea, that we're talking about governments, which may not be the world's greatest governments, but still we recognize the fact that they keep people in line and they keep people from simply trying to kill each other, and they maintain some semblance of order. Now, when it comes to the United States of America, so this goes without saying, but nevertheless, things that go without saying often need to be said. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very famous tshuva in source number 2. I gave you the first paragraph of it. But Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he talks about the Isser Lemostos Torah Likach Me'amem Shalah Yoser Mikfi Hatnoim Shekava. Right, says this is something that you can read about, unfortunately, with alarming frequency, where you have Torah institutions that take advantage of certain government programs where the government allots them certain monies for some kind of special ed or some kind of therapy or whatever it is, and they sometimes register more than is actually going on in the schools, so they sort of take advantage of the system to get for themselves. So I actually left out the part where Rav Moshe says, and obviously I'm not talking about anybody you've ever met or you've ever heard of, and not actual any Rosh Yeshiva would ever do this and whatever, but if it would ever happen, then obviously every Jew knows it's an Isser of Gezel and it's an Isser of violating the laws of the land, and he goes on about it for about 2-3 paragraphs. I left all of that out because I just cared for our purposes about the introduction where he writes, Hinei bedvar inyanei hachesed asher hamemshala shelanu artzo sabrisha ba'America. He says the chesed that the government of the United States of America, shehashem yisbarach birachamav hamirubim al she'eris hapleta miyehudi kol hamedinos Europe v'she'eris gedolei hatorah v'talmideim heivenu lekan v'nostu mekomas hatorah yishanim shemi Europe v'gam chadashim. So he says, Hashem, in his great chesed, his great mercy, has allowed the remnants of Europe. Obviously, he was talking that, unfortunately, the majority of European Jewry was wiped out, and the remnants, the She'eris HaPleta of the European Jewry, came to America, and this Medina of United States of America allowed us to set up both the Torah institutions that existed in Europe. Meaning, you go to, where do you learn? You say to somebody, where do you learn? You learn in the Mir. Well, so you're in the Mir of Brooklyn, or you're in the Mir in Yerushalayim? Like, Mir was a town in Poland, not a very large town in Poland either. But you learn in the Mir but they reestablished the Mir Yeshiva. There's a whole long story about how they broke apart. Rav Avram Kalmanovitz was the president of the Mir in Poland, so he didn't end up going through to Shanghai. He got visas to come to the United States before the Holocaust started, and Rav Eliezer Yehuda Finkel and Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, Rav Eliezer Yehuda Finkel got the got visas to go to Eretz Yisrael right away, and most of the yeshiva traveled with his son-in-law, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, through the whole thing with Shanghai, and they stayed in China for a couple of years, and then they finally made their way to Eretz Yisrael. So they allowed them to reestablish these yeshivas. You say, a guy that says, I learned in Tells. Say, well, is it Tells Riverdale or Tells Cleveland? Right? So what do you mean? Tells is Tells. It's not Riverdale, it's not in Cleveland. But in Cleveland and in Riverdale, they reestablished, certain students of the Tells Yeshiva reestablished those yeshivas, and so on and so forth. You have, in Israel, the Chevron Yeshiva is really the Slobodka Yeshiva, right? That was pre-World War I, even, I think, where the altar, both the altar of Slobodka and Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein moved from, they took, I think, about half the yeshiva, and they moved the yeshiva from Slobodka to Chevron until 1929, when they had to move it into Yerushalayim. But anyway, these are the reestablished of the She'eris HaPleta from the Mekomos HaTorah, Yishanim Shemi Europe, V'gam Chadashim, and there are many, many, the majority of yeshivos that exist nowadays are new yeshivos that didn't exist in Europe. They are brand new yeshivas that we were allowed by the American government to establish in the United States of America. And I bolded this line, Va'al Yidei Shemalchus Shel Chesed Zu. And because, through this government of Chesed, Shekol Matarasa Hu Lehitiv L'chol Toshvei HaMedina. which is like such a chiddush to Rav Moshe. We grew up with it already. We understand how obvious this is, that the goal of a government is to serve the people. But if you think about it, up until the United States of America, there wasn't such a thing. The goal of the people was to serve the government. You had, you know, the king, and you had his nobles, and then you had everybody else who were basically property of the king and his nobles, and their job was to do the king's bidding and, you know, make money for him, and they didn't really have their own property, and they didn't really have their own money, and everything went to the king. And here you have this country where they came up with this entirely new idea, which was that we're going to have the elected officials serve the people, and their whole goal is just to make life better for the people. And that's really a tremendous chiddush. And the rest of the world has pretty much followed suit. Obviously, there's many different types of government left in the world. But in the end of the day, the influence of the United States of America, certainly post-World War II, and certainly since the end of the Cold War, is so vast that the vast majority of civilized countries are democratic countries that all have this hashkafa that, like, we're not... It's not that the people are there to service the few. It's that the few leaders are there to actually help and service and make life better for the citizens of that particular country, which is a tremendous chiddush that we take for granted in our generation. So he says, and then he goes on and he says that they have certain programs. I think that's what that word is, programming. So he has certain programs. Rav Moshe didn't really... speak English, I don't think, so he wrote a lot of Yiddish type of English words. So a lot of times you read certain things, companies, and read like, so it's companies is kuf, aleph, mem, etc. So they have all these programs, lazor letalmidim, shebechol batei sefer, shebebedina, sheyuchlo lomod, leskado belimudam. They have all these different programs for the students in the schools that are able to learn and to grow in their learning. And the Torah institutions have also found great aid for their students from them. Certainly the heads of all these yeshivos recognize all the good things that the government is doing. And they constantly bless the country and all the leaders of the country with all possible blessings. You know, we talk about it like, oh, some people like the current president, some people don't like the current president. But in the end of the day, like, to be able to sit around and discuss whether or not you like the president is a tremendous thing. You know, to be able to say openly, like, well, I didn't vote for this guy, or even if I did vote for this guy, I didn't know he was going to act like this, you know, and to complain about it. That's something that's so new that never existed before. And in fact, if you find when this was already before my, you know, when I was only a little kid, but when they were having a lot of protests about Russian Jewry and trying to bring over the Russian Jews and get them out of the communism from behind the Iron Curtain, a lot of the European Rabbanim and people who when it came to every other walk of life, had such a forward-thinking attitude about everything, but when it came to public protests against the government, they couldn't see it. It didn't resonate with them at all, because they said, who ever heard of such a thing? Who ever heard of a Jew going out in public and saying what's on his mind and saying, we're unhappy with the way you're conducting your business? That's unheard of. That just leads to a pogrom the next day. You know, and they said, no, the way you do it is you have one askan and he goes and he bribes somebody under the table, and like that's how you get things done in government. You know, it might also be the way you get things done in government, but that was the only thing that they knew, because if a Jew back in the day would open his mouth in public, he would be shot, you know, either on the spot or quietly the next day. You know, so that was but that's something that they never really, the European Rabbanim could never really wrap their heads around, that there's this country that just sort of lets you do that, and it's okay, and it's actually part of the makeup of the country. So it's that's something that was so new and so unheard of. It really was, it's a tremendous thing. Obviously, as we'll discuss further, you can't take these things too far, and you have to understand that everything has its place. But see, just in terms of the way, this is just one example of Rav Moshe sort of stating the obvious, but when it's coming from an individual to whom this wasn't obvious, because he came from a different place. He came from he came from Tsarist Russia and then Communist Russia. So it was very very much not the way things had been going prior to his coming to the Lower East Side. It wasn't it was literally Yomam Valayla from what he had grown up with, and what he, you know, his youngest children had grown up with. I think he writes in one of his they write in the introduction to one of the newer volumes of the Igros Moshe that he said that he was willing to stick it out in Russia with everything that was going on. With I think one of the things that happened that the communists had outlawed going to the mikveh, and basically Rav Moshe, there was a major push in the positive direction of public hygiene. So Rav Moshe convinced one of the local officials in the city that he was in that if they could convert one of the public bathhouses into a very bidyeved kosher mikveh. He's saying, yeah, because the Jews, they never use the bathhouse, and they're gonna be a hygiene problem. So if you would just like do certain things to the bathhouse, then the Jews will use it. So he was able to convince one of the local governors to convert the bathhouse to the point that it would be a very very bidyeved mikveh. And he said that this is, and he was able to accomplish that, and the Jews who were in town were he said that they should use this mikveh, but apparently he never used it. He and his wife had decided amongst themselves that they weren't going to use it, and I think it was a number of years. For some reason, I have in my head 7 years that his wife never used the mikveh until they left. And he said, im kol zeh, he was willing to stick it out. He said, but at a certain point, there were no yeshivos to send his kids to, and he wasn't able to teach his kids past a certain point, and therefore he felt it was time to go, and that's why he ended up leaving. But just a little bit of an understanding of what religious life was like back then versus what it's like today, you know. So this is a little bit of where this statement is coming from. But I wanted to discuss further, now that we've sort of established how great the United States is for the Jewish people, just the concepts and the founding principles upon which the United States rests. Are these really Jewish concepts that we sort of want to embrace? Are they things that we want to run away from? Or like most things in life, is it somewhere in between? So I wanted to share just like some, these are some basic thoughts that kind of popped into my head. There's obviously a lot more to say about all these things, but the number one example of freedom that we have is what? When we talk about freedom, right? Yetzias Mitzrayim, Zman Cheruseinu, right? We talk about Cherus is leaving Mitzrayim, and in fact, that is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's calling card, Ad Hayom Hazeh. Whenever we want to talk about Hashem, we talk about the God who took us out of Mitzrayim. We say it twice a day in Kriya Shema. When we're Mekabel O Malchus Shemayim, we're Mekabel O Malchus Shemayim as Hashem who took us out of Mitzrayim. We're Mazkirin Yetzias Mitzrayim by Yom Uvalayla. And we have this mitzvah to talk about it every single day, and we have an additional mitzvah to talk about it at great length on the Leil HaSeder, and that's the way Hashem introduces Himself to us when He talks to us for the first time at the Aseret HaDibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Otzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mibeis Avodim. I am your God who took you out of Mitzrayim from the house of slavery. I am the one who freed you. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically considers Himself the God of our freedom. But then what does He follow it up with? Right? Lo yelecha Elohim acherim al panai. But you're not allowed to have any other gods besides Me. Meaning, I took you out of slavery, but now I'm in charge. So did we really get any better? Were we really any better off at this point? Meaning we went from being slaves to Paro, and now we're slaves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in the end of the day, it's not the same freedom that we speak of when we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's not the same freedom that the Constitution speaks of. It's a freedom of you went from one master to another master. And similarly, we have a lot of examples. When Hashem is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is by the Sneh, He's talking to Moshe Rabbeinu by the burning bush. What does He say to him? He says, first, Moshe refuses. He says, who am I that I should go to Paro? Plus, the Bnei Yisrael aren't going to listen to me anyway. And He says, Vayomer ki eyeh imach, I'm going to be with you, Moshe. This is the sign that I sent you. Bahutziyacha es ha'am mi Mitzrayim ta'avdun es ha'elokim al ha'har hazeh. When I take you out of Mitzrayim, you are going to serve Hashem on this mountain. Meaning, I'm not taking you out so that you can be free. I'm taking you out so that you can serve me. So again, and this is, by the way, as we see, what we sort of make a mistake. I don't know if this is an American thing or this is carries over from Yiddish or whatever it is, but every kid who goes to kindergarten, and sometimes some kids who go to, you know, older yeshivas as well, say, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say to Paro when he came to Paro? He said, let my people go, right? Does it say that anywhere in the Torah? It doesn't say that anywhere in the Torah. There's one place in the Torah where you could sort of suggest that it says that. But what does it always say? Shalach es ami, and then shalach es ami via avduni, shalach es ami via choguli bamidbar, right? It's always send them, meaning you're not just relinquishing them. You're not sort of releasing your hold on them and then, all right, go run and frolic in the desert. You're saying, send them out to me. You're sending them somewhere else. Moshe Rabbeinu never said, let the people go. He said, I want you to send them from your rishus into my rishus. I don't want them. So this is something that we have to keep in mind, that we were never free people. When we celebrate Zman Cheruseinu, we're celebrating the fact that we left the servitude of Paro and we went into the servitude of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Source number five, when it's talking about the fact that Hashem doesn't like it when we have avadim ivriyim, we don't like it when we acquire other Jews as slaves. Ki avadai heim, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they are my slaves. Asher hotzesi osam me'eretz Mitzrayim, lo yimachru mimkeres avin. You're not supposed to sell them as slaves. You're not supposed to treat them as slaves, because that means that you think that they are yours, when in fact they are not. They are mine. And therefore, I don't want my people, right? The Gemara in Kiddushin says, Avadaihem velo avadim la'avadim. They should not be slaves to you, because you're also my slaves. And therefore, I don't want my slaves owning my other slaves. But again, Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to us as his servants. Now, we as Americans, we don't like that very much. Now, I'm not talking about slavery, bizman hazeh. It's the very few places on earth, if any, where there's real slavery like there used to be, and that's a good discussion to have at some point in the future, in the times of Mashiach, let's say. Will there even be a concept of slavery anymore? Or, is there a concept that maybe the world has sort of moved past that? It's not. There's nowhere in the Torah where there's a chiyuv to own slaves. So it's not an obligation, but the question is, will it even be mutter la'asid lavo to own slaves, considering that basically it's something that the whole world deems reprehensible? It's a very nice discussion to have. I think Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an article about it. But either way, in the end of the day, we are referred to as the avadim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just last week's Parsha, what's the great compliment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to one of his faithful among the Meraglim? Ve'avdi kalev, my servant. You know, we say servant because we want to make it sound good even for us, but it's my slave, kalev, right? Ekev hoisa ruach acheres imo v'imale acharai, right? Because he had a different spirit within him, and he followed after me, so therefore I'm going to take him into Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to give him a nice inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. But again, Hashem wants to say something nice about Kalev. He refers to him as Avdi Kalev, my slave Kalev. He is still a slave of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not one of those evil Meraglim. He is still a slave of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the ultimate compliment that was given to any human being, and Vayamas Sham Moshe Eved Hashem Be'eretz Moav Al Pi Hashem. Moshe is referred to as Eved Hashem, right? Going back to Parshios, at the end of Parshios Beha'aloscha, also, right, I forgot the Lashon of the Pasuk, but something to the effect of, Lama lo yiresem ledaber be'avdi be'moshe. Why were you not afraid to speak out against my servant Moshe? Meaning, again, Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks about Moshe and wants to say something nice about him. He calls him an Eved. So what we see constantly throughout the Torah is that we are constantly being referred to as avadim, and that's not a bad thing. We don't have that kind of freedom that basically says that we can do whatever we want. The freedom that we celebrate was going from the Avdus to a Basar V'dam and ending up in the freedom, in the Avdus of the Almighty. We're in the Avdus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our ability to service something greater than ourselves. As opposed to serving Paro is serving something that is not greater than we are. Serving just another one of us, as opposed to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's connecting to the infinite. It's serving something that is greater than anybody can ever imagine in this world. And therefore, we say in Hallel, say it in a couple of days on Rosh Chodesh, Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha, ani avdecha ben amasecha pitachta lemoserim. Right? So what do we say? Kadosh Baruch Hu, we are your slaves. Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha ben amasecha. Right, there's a famous vort, a Hasidish vort from the Chedushei Harim, where he told his Hasidim, the first ever Gerer Rebbe, said to his Hasidim, if you want to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu fulfill your requests, so you should have a lot of kavana when you say Ana Hashem. Right, so then they went. The Hasidim went to the grandson of the Chedushei Harim. The second Gerer Rebbe was the Sfas Emes. So they came to the Sfas Emes and they said, "We do exactly what the Rebbe said, and we have a lot of kavana when we said Ana Hashem, but we don't get our tefillos answered the way we want. So we're arguing. Maybe the Rebbe meant Ana Hashem Hoshiana, and we have kavana and we say Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. So maybe it's not the right Ana Hashem." So the Sfas Emes told them, "You're both wrong. It's Ana. It's, first of all, it's spelled differently. Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha is spelled with a hey. It doesn't mean please. It means like alas, or it's an exclamation, as well as Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha." Meaning it's saying that's the Ana Hashem you're supposed to have kavana for. You're supposed to have kavana Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha, that we are your servants. Therefore, anything that you'll ever give us, we will use in your service. And therefore, why wouldn't the Kadosh Baruch Hu fulfill your request if what you're going to use, you're going to use to serve him anyway? And thus, you're supposed to have kavana when you say Ana Hashem ki ani avdecha. But what do we follow it up with? Ani avdecha ben amasecha. I am your servant, the son of your maidservant. Meaning, so it's very nice. We always like to say nice things about our mothers. But what in this context are we talking about? That we are the servants ben amasecha. So Rashi alludes to this, and I haven't seen this anywhere else inside, but it's one of the more commonly said over vorts when it comes to ani avdecha ben amasecha, is you have two types of slaves. You have a slave who was taken into captivity and being sold in the marketplace, where he's always remembering, you know, if you ever read the book Roots, right? So you have, he refused to go by his slave name. He only wanted to be called Kunta Kinte, right? So he said, I remember a time where I wasn't a slave, and therefore I don't want to be considered by this, I don't want to be called by this slave name. I want to be called by my real name. So that's Ani Avdecha. But Ani Avdecha ben Amasecha, I was born into this. I don't know anything else, and I don't want anything else. I don't, you know, so when we say to Hashem, I am your Eved, I'm not looking to break free. Just the opposite. Ani Avdecha ben Amasecha pitach tel Mosera. You are the one who opens up my bonds. The fact that I serve you is my freedom. And this goes like, this is also a later mission in Pirkei Avos, right, that the words of the Torah were charus al pi aluchos, al tikre charus el acherus. Right? What do we mean? So I mean, mikan she'ein ben chorin elamisha osek bat Torah. True freedom is one who is busy in Torah, meaning that a person who connects himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the highest possible way is experiencing what we view as true freedom, not the freedom to do whatever it is that you want. And this is something that we have in the United States today, and it could be that it was always like this, I don't know. But in the United States, we worship freedom for its own sake. Right, and that's what freedom has brought us. And don't get me wrong, I think everything we've said up until this point from Rav Moshe is 100% true, and the United States is still the best country in terms of any non-Jewish government has ever been to the Jews. It might even be better than the Jewish government is to the Jews. I don't know, but it's the best it's the best country we've ever been in. Does it mean it's going to last forever? If anybody's ever read a history book, we know it's not going to last forever. You know, but it's really a tremendous Medina Shel Chesed that they gave us. But one pitfall that many of us find ourselves in is that we end up worshiping freedom for its own sake, right? In other words, there are people whose job it is that all they talk about is that everyone should get their rights. Everyone, we worship the concept of rights. I have a right to this, I have a right to that. We never find that in the Torah. You're not an eved to nothing to the point that you then go ahead and you say, well, I have a right to everything and an obligation to nothing. It's just the opposite. You have the fact that we used to be avodim to paro, and we needed freedom from that. So what was the freedom? The freedom was to go and become avodim to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to take on a much better and loftier set of responsibilities. We needed freedom for that. And I think that could be, I don't know, I'm not a student of history of the United States, but it could be that the real idea behind the Bill of Rights was so that people would have the freedoms necessary to then go out and do something meaningful with their lives, right? It's not they did it enough that they changed it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as opposed to the original Nusach, which was life, liberty, and the pursuit of property, right? So they realized then, okay, like we have to, your goal should not be just to be free for its own sake. Your goal should be to be free so that you can then go do something bigger and better. So, okay, pursuit of happiness, that's pretty solid. You know, we want to go out there and we want to be happy. But for a Jew, there are things that trump happiness. We hope that those things will bring happiness upon us. And generally speaking, the test has shown that that's the case, that serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and connecting to something greater than ourselves does in fact bring ultimate happiness. But nevertheless, that's not our goal. Our goal is to say, thank you very much for the ability to have the freedoms that we need, but we want to use those freedoms to now have the freedom of religion, let's say, to then go out there and serve Hashem to the best of our abilities. We want to be able to speak, not so that we can say Lashon Hara and Rechilus and all kinds of negative things about the world. We want to be able to speak so that we can daven and learn Torah and do for others and, you know, and use those freedoms as a means of achievement. And I think that that's the difference between, you know, people who sit there complaining about their rights versus people who use their rights to actually do something. And I'm just have to say something controversial. So, hashtag justice for Harambe. It's the concept that we've come to worship rights to the extent that we now extend those rights to animals. Now, I'm not against animals, and the Torah was, you know, thousands of years ago, the Torah still had the concept of Tzar Balei Chaim when nobody else had anything resembling that. And there is still Ad Hayom Hazeh, the concept of Tzar Balei Chaim, which is probably a concept that if it's not min ha-Torah in terms of an obligation, it's certainly learned out from the Torah. But nevertheless, to say that we're at a point where animals have rights, the way human beings have rights, it's just that's the natural outgrowth of worshipping rights for their own sake. Right, so you get to the point that, like, I get so obsessed with what my rights are, I have the right to, you know, you don't, basically, it gets to a certain point where no one is allowed to tell me anything makes sense if I don't want it to make sense for me. You know, and again, just to throw out more controversial things, no one has the right to tell me, just because I'm a guy, I don't have to use the men's bathroom. First of all, what man wouldn't want to use the woman's bathroom? They're probably 100 times cleaner and nicer, but as my wife pointed out to me, there's no line by the men's bathroom. So, but the point is that becomes a right. Now I get to decide what I want to be. Not even, you know, without even forgetting about medical changes and things like that, I guess you just get to decide. I'm going to call myself X, even if I'm Y, or even if I'm XY, and then I get to say whatever it is that I am, because that's my right. That just comes from worshiping rights, lishma, that if you don't view having rights as a hechi timtza to actually accomplish something, you view them as an ends unto themselves, which is that's sort of where we get into the problems of that's freedom as in let my people go, not as in shalach es ami v'yavduni. And just one last point that you can see this from the Rambam, the last Rambam in Hilchus Malachim, last Rambam in the Mishneh Torah, where it's, when I was a kid, they made this into a song, so I knew this Rambam pretty well. Lo nis'avu ha'chachamim v'hanevim yemos ha'mashiach right? The Chachamim and the prophets did not desire the times of Mashiach, lo kedei sheyishlatu al kolam, not so that we could rule over the world, velo kedei sheyerdu ba'akum, and not so that we could lord over the non-Jews, velo kedei sheyinsu'u osama amim, and not so that the other nations will uplift us, velo kedei lecho velishtos lesmoach, not to eat, drink, and be merry, ela kedei sheyiyu pnuyim batorah v'chachmasa, so that we will be free to busy ourselves in Torah and its wisdom. And so there won't be anything distracting us from accomplishing Olam Haba. There won't be anything distracting us and holding us back. We won't have, right, that's the Lashon of Shmuel in the Gemara. Ein bein yemos ha-mashiach lo'olam hazeh, ela shibud golios bilvad, or shibud malchios bilvad, depending on which Gemara it is. And they say that the only thing that will be different in the times of Mashiach is that there will be world peace. There won't be governments holding other people down, and specifically us. We won't be held back by anti-Semitism and things, people trying to stop us from serving Hashem. And he says, what does it mean? In those times, there will not there won't be all these things. What are those things? Famine, war, jealousy, all these things, and the world will be a much better and wealthier place, in the sense that chol ma'adanim mitzuyin ka'afar, all the positive things in life will be very easily found. They'll be on the ground like dirt. You know, like they used to sing about the United States, that the streets were paved with gold. So the streets will actually be paved with gold. Why? So that everybody can have gold? No, because if everyone has gold, then gold isn't worth anything. No, it's because that way you won't have to worry about it, and you can actually spend your time achieving loftier goals. And you can spend time not having to worry about who's got more money than whom, and who's working towards something bigger than the next person. Rather, that people will be able to engage in spiritual pursuits, and that's the reason for world peace and all these things, and that's the reason why everybody will have ultimate freedom. So the goals of freedom, and the ultimate freedom, says the Rambam, which will be Bimos HaMashiach, is specifically so we can achieve in Avodas Hashem. So I think a message that we can take from this July 4th and every July 4th and is that Baruch Hashem, we live currently, hopefully sooner or later, hopefully sooner than later, we'll be in back in Eretz Yisrael. But for the time being that we're in the United States of America, we should recognize the greatness of this institution that is the American government and the Bill of Rights, that gives us the freedoms that we need to survive, and that there is such a concept that has caught on worldwide as governments which service the people and not the other way around, and realize that doesn't take us away from being avadim to Hashem. It actually frees us in order to be avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Paro was holding us back from being avadim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we had to spend all of our time in his service. This government gives us the opportunity to be free in order that we can be meshabed ourselves to something much greater than we are, until that time where the entire world will be such, Bios HaMashiach, where people will be able to completely spend time attaching and connecting themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm going to...
Thank you so much, Rabbi Wilson. I posted the schedule.